Welcome to a burning fire, Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. The text of our study is John chapter 4, verses 46 through 54. So Jesus came again unto Cana of Galilee, where he made the water wine. And there was a certain nobleman whose son was sick at Capernaum. And when he heard that Jesus was come out of Judea into Galilee, he went unto him and besought him that he would come down and heal his son, for he was at the point of death. Then said Jesus unto him, Except ye see signs and wonders, ye will not believe. The nobleman saith unto him, Sir, come down ere my child die. And Jesus saith unto him, Go thy way, thy son liveth. And the man believed the word that Jesus had spoken unto him, and he went his way. And as he was going, the servants met him, and told him, saying, Thy son liveth. And then inquired he of them the hour when he began to amend. And they said unto him, Yesterday at the seventh hour the fever left him. So the father knew that it was at the same hour in which Jesus said unto him, Thy son liveth, and himself believed, and his whole house. This is again the second miracle that Jesus did, when he was come out of Judea into Galilee. Now this nobleman lived in Capernaum, about 20 miles from Cana. His son was sick, indeed about to die. He requested that Jesus come to Capernaum and do what he could for the son. Now he did not seek Jesus out of curiosity, nor did he desire to tempt Jesus as many others were doing. His was not the recognition of a spiritual need, but he urged Jesus to come out of concern for the physical welfare of his son. His loved one was about to die. He was so concerned about it. It was an urgent matter because the son was at the point of death. Time was very much in essence, but we emphasize that his desire at this time was relief from physical distress. Now Jesus knew the man lacked spiritual faith, as is evident from his remark in verse 48. We might even consider Jesus giving a mild rebuke for being concerned more for the physical than for the spiritual. He may have been expressing a disappointment in the man's primary interest. It was not, and is not, the primary mission of Christ to aid people physically. And while he was concerned about physical problems, else he would not have been involved in healing, he used healing to accomplish a nobler and more important goal of spiritual concern. So often, though not in this specific instance, the word compassion is used with reference to the attitude of Jesus toward many who were in distress in some fashion. But his miracles were done primarily to prove to people that he was from God and that they accept the message of salvation. In John chapter 2 and verse 23 we read, Now when he was at Jerusalem at the Passover, in the feast day, many believed in his name when they saw the miracles that he did. In John chapter 3 and verse 2, the same came to Jesus by night, speaking of Nicodemus. Nicodemus said unto him, Rabbi, we know that thou art a teacher come from God, for no man can do these miracles that thou doest except God be with him. Yes, Jesus used his miracles to prove he was the Messiah. In Matthew chapter 11, verses 2 through 5, Now when John had heard in the prison the works of Christ, he sent two of his disciples and said unto him, Art thou he that should come, or do we look for another? Jesus answered and said unto them, Go and show John again those things which you do hear and see. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, the poor have the gospel preached to them. When miracles would not convince the people of his identity, Christ would cease working with them and he would leave. Matthew 13 and verse 58, And he did not many mighty works there because of their unbelief. By and through his concern for man's physical distress and the desire for man's welfare, and by the use of his divine power to heal the sick, he was able to command their attention. He could capture their confidence, and then he could teach them the word of life that he came to deliver. The confidence the nobleman had in Jesus at this time was obviously limited. He did not see Jesus as the Messiah or as the Son of God. He must have thought Jesus could not do anything unless Jesus was on the scene where the problem existed. There's no indication that he believed Jesus was able to do anything at all if the Son died. He did not have the kind of faith that was exhibited by a centurion in Matthew 8 and verse 8. The centurion there answered and said, "Lord, I am not worthy that thou shouldest come under my roof, but speak the word only, and my servant shall be healed." And furthermore, there's no hint of any spiritual interest by this nobleman regarding Jesus. But Jesus said to him, "Go thy way, thy son liveth." He didn't go with the nobleman, but he pronounced the son healed. The power of his word was the power of Christ. The man accepted what Jesus said, knowing nothing of any result that had occurred regarding his son. It is not likely that he was only assured that something would be done. The son lived. What a glorious thing. How thankful must the father have been. By comparing the time of the son's recovery with the time of Jesus' words, the nobleman knew it was Jesus who had healed his son. The result was now a more mature and complete faith in Christ. Now he believed in him, not only as a healer, not only as a helper in time of physical distress and suffering, but as the Lord, the spiritual deliverer and guide. Not only did the nobleman believe, but his family also. And it goes without saying that Jesus no longer is among men in the flesh to perform such miracle and mighty works. He has completed his mission of providing salvation for all, ascending into heaven until his return. His word is confirmed. His identity is declared. The purpose for the miracles has long ago been accomplished. But the account of these miracles reveals some basic principles bringing people to believe in Christ, which is the number one work in life as children of God and His church. We see the principle of having compassion for people in their physical distress. 1 John 5 and verse 7 teaches, "But whoso hath this world's good, and seeth his brother have need, and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him?" We can also see that the right use of relieving physical needs can win confidence and provide opportunity to teach the word of life. Benevolence for benevolence's sake falls short. Many cannot be reached on the basis of a spiritual need because they do not realize that they have such a need. They possibly, however, might be reached first through provision of their physical need and then be led to recognize their greater spiritual need. It is in this way that we can show we truly care for them. When people see Christians helping others, they will be more attentive to what the Christians have to say. We can tell them of their spiritual need, and they will already be convinced that we have nothing in mind but their good. In many lands today, Jesus Christ is unknown, and yet he is the only answer that there is to the needs of the people living there. Brethren have shown concern for such people, and they have used benevolence as a means to arouse their attention and their interest. They have done deeds of genuine compassion to gain the opportunity to present the gospel. Now, this does not suggest that doing the benevolence is the ultimate goal. It does not teach a social gospel, which many do not even understand, even though they accuse us of the preaching a social gospel. It is simply following a path that Christ himself took to open hearts and open minds. Christians are blessed with salvation, certainly in our land, and we're blessed with many physical resources in abundance. And we do well to remind ourselves of the words of Christ in Luke 12 and verse 48, "For unto whomsoever much is given, of him shall much be required. And to whom men have committed much, of him they will ask the more." By our physical resources, dear friend, we have an opportunity to let the light of saving truth penetrate the darkness of sin that dominates the lives of so many. There are several motives that will provoke us to study this kind of lesson. Friend, we need to learn what Jesus did while he was here on earth. But we also need to rehearse the basic principles in doing our Christian duty. We should be motivated into a greater liberality regarding giving and a greater participation in responsible and authorized benevolence. Brethren have sent many men into countries where they are able to apply their medical skills and other talents to help the physically deprived and the needy. And while they are there doing that, efforts of a productive nature were also being used to teach those people to hear the gospel of Jesus Christ. In many distant lands, in lands who are not as blessed as are we, time is running out, not only because they are physically diseased, but they are spiritually lost. By providing physical aid, taking advantage of the capacity to teach other people the spiritual salvation, we can imitate Christ to the saving soul, just like Christ did when he healed the nobleman's son. This has been A Burning Fire, and your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.